This is KYUK Public Radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Evan Erickson. The state capitol in Juneau has two elevators that lawmakers ride all session long, up to committee rooms, down to the chambers, back up for negotiations. This year, oil prices are taking lawmakers on a similar ride. The higher prices climb, the better the outlook for Alaska's oil-dependent budget. But it also hits regular Alaskans through their utilities, their groceries, their fuel, their cost of living. One legislator from Western Alaska says that pain has an outsized impact on his constituents, and that's shaping his priorities as lawmakers head into their final budget negotiations. KNOM's Ben Townsend reports.
It's no secret the state of Alaska depends on oil production for a big chunk of its budget. So when oil prices spiked after the United States and Israel attacked Iran in late February, on its face, that was a good thing for the state's budget. But
I would rather have low oil prices because it impacts our constituents so greatly.
This is Democratic State Representative Neil Foster. He represents most of the Seward Peninsula in Western Alaska.
You know, for somebody who makes $200,000 a year, energy costs are a small portion of their income. Somebody making $20,000 a year, that's a huge. So it impacts our district tremendously, number one.
Excluding his hometown of Nome, over one in five people in Foster's district are living at or below the poverty line, according to census data. That's over twice the statewide average. And even if the spike in global energy prices is short-lived, fuel buyers in Western Alaska may be stuck paying for fuel with prices inflated by the war for an entire year. That's because most communities in Western Alaska get just one or two big fuel deliveries a year because of sea ice and economies of scale by buying and shipping in bulk. Resale prices within those communities are essentially locked in until the next delivery. 15 communities in the region buy their fuel through the Norden Sound Economic Development Corporation's bulk fuel program. The Nome-based nonprofit's chief operating officer, Tyler Rhodes, says by buying together, the program is able to pass along savings to customers. The exact price NSEDC pays for fuel depends on fuel prices the month its massive delivery tanker is loaded. This year, Rhodes expects the ship to be loaded up in May and then get underway toward the Bering Strait. Rhodes says trying to wait until prices are lower isn't really an option. Villages running low on fuel after a long and historically cold winter can't wait. By summer, that big ship will be on the horizon offshore from Nome. Like worker bees, small barges buzz back and forth from the tanker, ferrying loads of heating oil and gas to the region's coastal villages. Back down in Juneau, Representative Foster feels a sense of urgency too. Foster, who co-chairs the House Finance Committee, worked with his caucus to add $17 million to the House's version of the budget for the dormant Alaska Heating Assistance Program. To Foster's frustration, the Senate cut the funding 3 weeks later.
When folks start to look at programs to get rid of and things to reduce, it's the things that hit low-income people the most, and it's just made me so angry.
The state-run program was defunded in 2015. Foster says for a family of five, it provided over $4,000 a year. And he says, unlike other assistance programs focused on heating oil, it could be used to buy propane to cook with or gas for four-wheelers. At the time, the state program supplemented the federal low-income home energy assistance program, which is still going, but is restricted to very low-income Alaskans. Foster says he sees the writing on the wall this summer, with resellers' prices almost certain to jump once they factor in their costs.
If there's going to be any pain, I would rather see that at the state level. That does mean reduced services, but, again, if we're going to cut somewhere, I think we should cut oil tax credits. You know, that's where it should be coming from, not everyday Alaskans.
The Senate did propose a $150 energy relief payment for Alaska residents that qualify for the permanent fund dividend. If every PFD-eligible Alaskan received the check, it would cost the state over five times the House proposal that would only benefit low-income households. The Senate draft budget also includes a $1,000 PFD, the same as last year. The Senate is still fine-tuning its budget ahead of a floor vote. It'll then likely go to a conference committee, which could revive the heating program. But line items in the legislature's final budget can still be picked off by the governor's veto. Legislators are aiming to send their final budget to the governor by the end of the regular session, May 20th. With reporting from Juneau, I'm Ben Townsend in Nome.
Alaskans between the ages of 12 to 15 had the highest rate of ATV crash injuries compared to other age groups. That's according to data from emergency department visits from 2019 to 2024 in a bulletin released by the State Public Health Division. Riley Fitting is an injury epidemiologist for the state. He says it's a good reminder that even if a kid isn't driving an ATV, it's important for them to wear protective gear.
We saw very frequent injuries, like the specific injuries associated with ATV-related visits were lacerations, traumatic brain injuries, bone fractures, and those ED visits being common among youth.
He says riders should wear helmets, boots, and long pants and sleeves. Fitting says the north and southwest regions of the state had the highest rates of injury from ATV crashes. Alaskans also die from ATV injuries at about four times the rate that people in the lower 48 do. Fitting says that's also likely a reflection of how much Alaskans use ATVs for transport.
Not all places in Alaska have roads that we can drive on. So often we have to rely on these machines to go over uneven terrain, snow, terrain that has water maybe running over it that's shallow enough. That's all in essence. We rely on these machines.
About 40% of injuries in the state happen to ATV passengers. Fitting says for that reason, it's important that Alaskans don't overload an ATV with more people than capacity. Greg Brelsford bills himself as the education candidate for governor. The 75-year-old is an independent running against a stacked, mostly Republican field of candidates vying to become Alaska's next head of state. Brelsford is a Harvard-educated attorney and lives in Anchorage, but he says he formed strong ties to rural Alaska early on in his career, working with Alaska Native corporations and tribal nonprofits. He went on to manage municipal and borough governments in Bristol Bay, and most recently worked as an Anchorage prosecutor. Brelsford recently visited Bethel to kick off a campaign that he says is informed by his connection to rural communities. He spoke with me, KYUK's Evan Erickson, about his candidacy, and this interview has been significantly shortened for length and edited for clarity.
The main aspect of my gubernatorial campaign that comes from my background in tribal and village and rural Alaska is my focus on education. This governor is in the end of his second term, so he's in the eighth year of 8 years of tenure as governor. In the first 7 years, he raised the per-student annual funding, which is the base student allocation, the BSA. He raised it $30 in 7 years. That's not an accident. That's not negligence. That's cold, calculated, and cruel intended, and that's a crime. Now, I'm using the word crime metaphorically, but it's that serious to do that to a million students over 7 years. You can see how pivotal the governor's position is. For 8 years, he's obstructed and abandoned and betrayed and sold out our K-12 school children. We need a governor who will fight for the kids, not fight against them going forward. We've got to turn that around.
What specific steps would you take immediately to change that trend of impeding public education funding?
Well, I would like to work in a partnership with the legislature to make those kinds of adjustments. And so that would be resolving the funding on an annual basis much earlier in the year so that the school districts know where they stand before the end of the school year, which is not the case now. They're catching up, you know, revising their budgets and revising the termination notices that they have to send a teacher because of certain deadlines, and then once they know they have money, they can resend those termination notices or not, depending on how much money they have. But it's extraordinarily disruptive to the administration and the management of the schools to have all the senior leaders not know how much money they have.
What role do you believe the governor should play on climate change, and do you have any plans regarding that?
We can be more proactive about monitoring and preparing for it. For example, staging emergency intervention resources ahead of time. But also looking out 10 and 20 years from now and how do we design our communities and locate our communities, but design them for the kind of extreme weather that's clearly coming now. That's what the last administration failed to do. They didn't look out 3, 5, 10 years in advance and start to anticipate these things. I would make sure that the state of Alaska does that as governor. What I would do, I would create a DARPA-like agency in the state government, specifically to look at, to monitor and predict and forecast these kinds of extreme weather events, but not only in terms of the events, the weather, but in terms of the preparation and the anticipation 5 and 10 years in advance in terms of where the villages may need to be relocated. We're talking now about rebuilding and relocating villages from Typhoon Halong. Mm-hmm. Well, there's going to be more. We don't need to wait for the next one to hit to start thinking mm-hmm. proactively about what to do. And so I would do a DARPA-like agency, which, you know, is the Army agency that looks out 5 and 10 years at strategic warfare and, war strategy and war equipment and material in terms of what the Army needs 10 and 20 years now. That's a model we could use here in Alaska and focus it specifically on extreme weather events, and I would create a state agency to do that.
That was Greg Brelsford, the 18th candidate to enter the 2026 Alaska governor's race, speaking with me, KYUK's Evan Erickson. This is KYUK News. I'm Evan Erickson. Koyana for listening. Please share your news tips, comments, or suggestions. You can email us at news@kyuk.org or message us on Facebook. And stay tuned for Yoktun Ganumchit coming up.